Me to the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel. Shall we turn to chapter 3? The book of Daniel, chapter 3. Shall we read at verse 13? Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other god that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to the province of Babylon. God will bless his own word to us. I like those three negative words of these three positive men. But if not. And in those words we have divine principle and human confidence. And if there's something that is desperately lacking among Christians today, those are the two things. A confidence in the living God. And assurance that God is. And that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. It's quite evident that my good brother John doesn't believe in our millennialism. It seems as though he recognizes that there is a certain definite future for the Jew. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. Or else we'd have to take out those three books that our brother has mentioned. And most certainly we'd have to take this book out that I've read from today. I think the great principle of prophecy is this. And I think this is why it's gone into disrepute to a great extent. That prophecy demands, first of all, a literal fulfillment before there can be a spiritual application. And so we must accept if God speaks about this people in prophecy, there is a definite future for the nation. I'm quite sure that we have read the book of Daniel anyway. And that we'll discover that its 12 chapters divide into two equal parts. That the first six, more or less, generally speaking, is history, and the second six are prophecy. In the first six, we have the man Daniel interpreting the dreams and the visions that a Gentile has. In the second six, we find an angel interpreting the dreams and visions that the man of God, the Jew, has. I think you'll discover too, if you'll read a little deeper in your books, that the first chapter the 8th and onward, they're written in Hebrew. And from chapter 2, including chapter 7, they're written in Chaldee. And those that are written in Hebrew are for the Hebrews. And those that are written in the Chaldean language are for the Gentiles. This thing has not come by any mishap or any theory or just things running astray. These things have come according to God's mind and purpose. I think we'll discover this as we look into the prophetic part just for a minute, because I don't intend to talk upon that. That there was a king by the name of Artaxerxes. In history he's called Xerxes. Longinus, history has got him called. He's just called Artaxerxes in the book of Nehemiah. That Artaxerxes in his 20th year gave a decree to go out and build the city, the walls, and the streets of Jerusalem. And if you'd like to work out those 69 weeks, you'll discover that from the day of the month of the year that Nehemiah received his decree to the day that Jesus rode upon an ass and fulfilled the prophecy of Zechariah was exactly to the day, 69 weeks, when the Son of God presented himself publicly and for the last time as God's elected king over Israel. And they rejected him, and he was cut off and had nothing. But I'm quite sure you understand, brother and sister, that there's never been a league by the Prince of Rome with the children of Israel from that day since. So the 70th week of Daniel hasn't come yet. You will notice too, my dear brother, that when that 70th week starts, you'll discover that the king is going to come up in Israel. Not the king of the north, not the king of the south, but there's going to rise up a wicked king. And I believe that's just where the gap comes in the 11th chapter, between 35 and 36. We can trace the history quite clearly up to the end of verse 35. His name is Antiochus Epiphanes, which was the first man to desecrate the altar of the Lord. And he offered a sow upon it. And he builded an image and set it upon the brazen altar that became the abomination that made desolate the temple and made desolate the people of God. And the Spirit of God takes that abomination as a picture of what is yet to be. In the midst of the 70th week, we can trace the history up to 35. And then in verse 36, Israel have another king, a wicked king, an idol shepherd, a man that will give his allegiance to that beast in Rome, a man that will make a covenant with the nation for a week, a man that will cause a world to worship the beast and will set up his image in the temple of Jerusalem, and the abomination of the desolator will come, and the faithful remnant, the picture that we have here in Daniel chapter 1 and chapter 3, will flee to the mountains of Judea for their safety, and God will keep them and God will preserve them until he comes in his glory. There's a lovely picture, isn't there, in chapter 2, when the image has been seen, and then the stone comes, and Daniel has got to interpret it. He's first of all got to discover what it is, and then he interprets it. And when he comes to the stone, he speaks of one described as the Ancient of Days. Brother and sister, there's no doubt as to who he is. He's God in his resplendent majesty, in the person of his Son. For the one who is the Ancient of Days is no other than the Son of Man in Revelation chapter 1. Have a look at his eyes, his face, his feet. Have a look at his garment. But he's described as the Ancient of Days, resplendent with all his manifested, essential, intrinsic glory when he comes to judge a world. God will judge the secrets of men. God will judge the world in righteousness. But when we come to him, taking his kingdom, he comes as the Son of Man to take it out of the hands of the Ancient of Days. Brother and sister, they are not two persons. They are one. They are one. In Revelation chapter 1, we find the person manifested in his resplendent glory. It's for judgment. But when he comes to take his kingdom, I see in Revelation 5, a young lamb as he had been freshly slain, taking a scroll from the hand of him that is and was and ever will be. Two persons, brother and sister. There is one God. Daniel could only see him in all his manifested glory. John could see that same resplendent person as Jesus, the Son of God. Brother and sister, they that do know their God shall be strong and shall do exploits. And here's the secret of what my brother has been talking about. Here's a man of the quality and fibre of Mordecai. It's Haman that calls him the Jew. He's the one. The one that hated him. The one that spat out his name with disgust and with shame and contempt. But it's a name that he was pleased to own. And when we come to chapter 12, it says, Mordecai the Jew brought prosperity to the kingdom and spake peace to the nation. He might be the song of the drunkard and of them that sit in the gate. They might spit out the blessed name of Jesus upon the lips of men and in a couple of weeks to come the more. But he's taken that name to the highest glory. And it's Jesus, the Son of God, upon the throne. They that do know their God, brother and sister, shall be strong and shall do exploits. I think my brother was seeking, and I'm quite sure he did, seeking to impress upon our conscience and our heart, there are no circumstances too difficult for God. None. They that do know their God shall be strong and shall do exploits. And if I can say it again, brother and sister, if there are two things that are sadly lacking today, it's a confidence in the living God and a simple faith in his word. That's where we've slipped from. Your opinions, no matter how great, no matter how they may be bolstered up by an intellect or anything else, it will never supersede nor ever yet stand in the place of God's revealed word and a simple faith in that word. Now let's come to the circumstances here for a few minutes. I want you to notice what was happening to these four young men. After all, it says that they were the sons of the king. They were of royal blood. They could stand up with royalty. They could look at this man Nebuchadnezzar and they could say, "We were born of royal blood. Your father was but a captain in the king's army. You have just come in because your father wrought great victories. We're of royal blood. By right, we're the sons of the king. By right." There may be many that will usurp that place, brother and sister. But if we are the sons of the king, it'll manifest itself in no matter what circumstances are presented. You know, I've gone a little bit past, although I still enjoy to hear people say that they've trusted Christ. You never lose the joy of that, do you? Never lose it. But I'm not just satisfied with that now. By their fruits ye shall know them. And if the life is there, it must manifest itself. It must. I remember walking with an old man. Perhaps some of you who are older might remember his name. His name was Woodhead, lived down in Kent, and he belonged to the county's work when it was a good work. And we were walking along the street one day, and he was really despondent. His brethren, they just heaped the criticism upon him because he sought to abide by God's word and taught the scriptures as faithfully as God had given him the ability. And his brethren, they just didn't want it at all. And they'd almost reached the point of forbidding the poor old brother to open his mouth. He said, "I'll give it up. I'll give it up." And as young as I was, I looked at him. I said, "My brother, you can't give it up." "Who can't?" he said. I said, "You can't give it up. If there's life there at all, you can't give it up." And so he walked along the road with me for a little while, quiet. It was an avenue, a row of trees on either side of the road. And they just tarmacked the edge of the pavement. And the tarmac was pressed hard down around the trunks of the trees. And suddenly he stopped. Said, "If there's life there at all, it must break through the bitterest opposition. It must. If there's life, it must manifest itself." Who here is it? And down there on the ground, there was a little tender shoot springing out of the root. You could have bent down and broke it as brittle as that. But because it was a living thing, it had burst through that tarmac that the heavy roller had pressed down and down and down, and it had cracked the whole thing, and life was manifesting itself, brother and sister. And here they were. They were the sons of the king, the sons of the king by right, and there was no usurper, and there was none that could take the honor to themselves, that could break it down and stifle it and put a lid on it and let it die. There was nothing. My young sister, my young brother, my elder brother and sister, if there's life there at all, life from above, it'll manifest itself to the praise and the glory and the pleasure of the one that gave it, despite what a world might seek to do. They'd been defeated. Now don't be surprised at that, brother and sister. There's many of God's children been defeated. But Hebrews 11 says that those that were defeated, they didn't accept any deliverance, knowing that God had provided some better thing. But if the principles of God can't change because a tyrant's upon the throne, Never. And so they'd been defeated. And they'd seen that city that had been called by the name of God go down in ruins. They'd seen it razed to the ground. They'd seen the temple burned with fire. And the gates were down. Defeated. Now just try to put yourself in that place to start with. Defeated. I don't know what kind of a job you've got. I don't know what kind of a home you live in. I don't know what kind of a street you've got. I don't know what you are psychologically. I don't know what you are temperamentally. I don't know. And I don't know how adverse circumstance can affect you. I don't know whether you've gone down into the dust and you've felt defeated. Daniel knew what it was. Defeated. But more than defeated, they'd been dishonored. They weren't content to burn the temple, but they'd taken the vessels out of the temple that were holiness unto the Lord. And they'd taken the vessels of the temple and they'd put them in the house of their gods. They'd been dishonored, as though the living God in which they trusted was not able to save himself, much less to save the people that trusted in him. They'd been brought down to the dust with defeat by a mightier hand. But now they'd been dishonored and they'd gone into the holiest of all and they'd taken the vessels of the Lord and had put them in the house of their gods. They were going to do a bit more than that. They were going to bring them into the banquet of Belshazzar and they were going to drink out of them. That drunkard, dissolute emperor, with his wives and his concubines and his captains. Defeated and dishonored they were. Notice something else. They were taken away from home. Can I use the word? They were denationalized. You can do that, you know. You can do that. Or you can take people out of their own country and you can transplant them in another country and they'll acquire the customs and the language and the habit of the country into which they've been transported. But you can't do that with a Jew. And you oughtn't to be able to do that with a Christian either. It was just like taking a young Christian, an educated Christian, brought up in a Christian home, enjoying the fellowship and the company of the saints and assembly fellowship, and then transporting right over there to communist Russia and putting him in a university there. That's just what it was like. Now, this is the picture that God is giving, not me. Not me. They'd been defeated. They'd been dishonored. They'd been denationalized. And everything was counted in a subtle way to break every tie and every relationship that they had with God and the people of God and the things of God. That was the purpose of it. Notice something else. They were indoctrinated. And so these young men, they were chosen that they might be put in the school of the Chaldeans for 3 years. That they might learn the language of the Chaldeans and the reading or the literature of the Chaldeans. And for 3 years, that's all that they were taught. I have seen many a young man, young woman, go under in this country when they've gone to university. I've seen spiritual lives snuffed like that when they've gone into these high places. And here's 4 young men transported away from the things that they knew and held dear and are brought into a godless pagan place. And for 3 years they're taught the language and the literature of the land. No, I'm not painting it too black. I don't think I'm painting it black enough. Will you notice something else? They were intimidated as well. And the king set down the meat from his table and the wine that he drank. They were being intimidated. They were only slaves. Who were they to say to the king, we don't want this, we're not used to this, we're not going to have it? Who were they to say that? Will you notice? They were insulted as well. For the four names that these young men had all had some title of God in them. They were called by his name. And Nebuchadnezzar the king, or his chamberlain, changed the names. And he put the names of their gods in them. They were insulted. And everything was done that could be calculated to break down anything that belonged to the past of these four young men, to break the ties, to alienate them from God and the things of God. But I'm pleased to say, he says, Daniel purposed in his heart. I like that. That's where things begin, brother and sister. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. That's where failures come, brother and sister. I can tell long before you've fallen into sin. I can tell long before you've trodden the pathway of estrangement. I can tell you're going to do it. For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Do you remember that good man Barnabas? When he was sent to Antioch, it says when he saw the grace of God, I like that. He didn't have a testimony meeting now, and he didn't listen to them all giving their testimony. It wasn't when he heard the grace of God. It's when he saw the grace of God. He exhorted them that with all purpose of heart, they should cleave unto the Lord. The wise man that says to his son, isn't it? My son, give me thine heart. For out of the heart are the issues of life. Now, where is your heart, brother and sister? Have you been brought down step by step as these four young men were? In a way that was calculated to break every link that bound them to God and the things of God? Have you been brought down like that? Then I'd like to say this. There are no circumstances too bad. But what God can't keep his child in the circumstance and above them. So then, there's the first thing. And I'll go quickly. I think I'd have to be like my brother. I'll have to say the real part that I read until tonight. But you'll notice then the first is the resolve of heart. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat and so on. It would have been a defilement to do it. Now you know the reason why, don't you? If you don't, have a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And that'll give you the reason for it. Both the food and the wine were offered as libations to their gods before they ever touched the lips of the king. How can this one, who is named by the name of God, take the thing that has been offered to a dead, dumb, deaf idol without defiling his lips? If there's one thing, brother and sister, that is a problem, is this. In the Acts of the Apostles, things were black and white. Today, there are too many grey. Too many greys. And I'll tell you why we've got all the greys instead of good black and whites. Because we've put something else in the place of this. So that when we start to ask a question, then it becomes a questionable thing. And if it's a questionable thing, it's contrary to this. Because God says that you might know. and I'm quite sure of this, I've said it before, there's everything in this book to advise a Christian as to his behaviour Godward, churchward, and worldward, so that he's left without excuse. Now here, as far as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were concerned, the thing was quite clear. There were no doubts, no ifs, no buts, no arguments. They would have defiled themselves if they'd taken the king's meat and the king's wine, and were not going to do it. But brother and sister, if I can say this, they didn't suddenly acquire that when they were in Babylon. That's what they were doing when they were in Jerusalem. Will you notice that? You know, I'm afraid I've got to turn my face away and smile when I hear Christians talking about dying for the Lord. You can tell the man or the woman that will die for the Lord because they're living for the Lord. And a Christian that doesn't live for the Lord won't die for him. This is what they were doing when things were comfortable at Jerusalem. That had become their spiritual habit in the things of God. So that when they were transported into this alien country, and they sought to degrade them and make them strangers to the things that they loved, the root of the matter was in their heart. And if they didn't defile their lips in Jerusalem, then they could purpose in their heart. They weren't going to defile them in Babylon. So, brother and sister, things are getting harder. I'm no pessimist either. But I do believe with all my heart we're right on the edge of things. And I don't believe the Lord is very, very far away. I don't. And I think the child of God should be saying more and more, Amen, Lord Jesus, come quickly. I'm no pessimist. But things will wax worse and worse. So that while we have the opportunity now, it's as well that we learn to live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. Now, notice the next one. It's all right having a resolve, but they made a request as well. Oh, I know a lot of Christians, they've got a real resolve. But when it comes to the issue, they keep the mouth shut, don't they? Well, what's the good of having a resolve if you don't do anything about it? Because they had a resolve, they spake. They opened their mouth. Very courteously, you'll notice. Courteously. They went to the one that had been set over them, and they asked that they might be freed from this injunction. Oh no, he said, I'll sacrifice my head. But will you notice they didn't leave it there and say, well, there you are, we've done the best we can now. We have really tried to get out of it, and we couldn't get out of it, so we'll have to have it just the same. Oh, no, no, no. They went to the eunuch that was immediately set over them. And they said, now, put us under trial for 10 days. Give us pulse of vegetables and water. Just give us that for 10 days. And you decide now. You decide. And if you can see that we're worse off than the others, then we'll come to our cake and milk, and then the meat and the wine. And so they made request with their lips, brother and sister. And I've discovered this. It doesn't matter what the circumstance is, and what men or women try to do to you as a Christian, you resolve in your heart that you maintain your place. Then speak. And you'll discover that it becomes an issue right away. And God can take the rest. So they spake. Now will you notice the result? And this is lovely. The result was seen in the face. It was seen in the face. Now you can't make a resolve in your heart. And you can't open your mouth for the Lord. But what the evidence isn't going to be seen somewhere or another. Oh, it's got to be, brother and sister. It's got to be. I reckon that Nicodemus was a different man from the day that he went with Joseph of Arimathea and begged the body of Jesus than all the time he'd been before. I reckon he was. I reckon it manifested itself in his face. It couldn't have been any other. And I'm quite sure it'll be with you and I. It'll be manifested to all and sundry, to all around. There's no substitute for living the life that pleases God. There isn't. Now notice the next till I finish. Will you notice the reward? He takes Daniel, he takes the four, and he exalts them. And what does God do? He maintains Daniel through the dynasty of the Babylonians, and he takes him, as far as we know, into the third year of the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So that's well past the 70 years captivity, isn't it? So he was at least 73 years in the land of Babylon. So he must have been quite a young man when he was taken to Babylon. Not an old, mature man. Not a man that had no fears just because he was at the point of death. He was a young man with his life before him, with all its pleasure that it might offer. That's the man that purposed in his heart, despite what the king would do. He'd refrain, he'd request, and God saw that the result was seen in his face, and the reward was his. And he carried on through the reign of at least four kings, and his honor never deteriorated. In fact, it grew from strength to strength until Cyrus thought to exalt him above all the captains and the presidents in the land. And may God bless his word.